So far, so good. So far, so good.
So far, so good. I guess is that the t-shirt for the school year? Are we talking about the fact that Google Hangouts is actually not collapsing in on us?
Well, don't worry. Give it time.
Give it time. Google, if you're listening, stay strong, buddy. Stay strong.
So Chris, it's mid-May? I'm looking at the calendar beside me, 2016.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. I love it because I look over, I'm like, oh, that's what happened in 2016. So I can't even pretend like, oh, it's mid-May now, Chris. What's going on with you at school?
I know. It's funny as far as the I have to tell you, every week I do take that quick sort of like your office check, and I take a peek to see if there's anything different. If you throw down any Easter eggs, you know, something new on the shelf or something a little bit different in your space.
And well, that's interesting that you say that, because this space is going to be redone in a month or two.
Seriously, what are you doing to it?
So what you see behind me, right there, that's a closet door. Mm-hmm. And right there is the actual door to get in the room.
Okay.
So what's going to happen is this should be like, I should have like some kind of countertop that ends here. In front of me where the computer is, this whole wall in front of me is going to be like a built-in bookshelf library type thing. We have a carpenter who's coming to do a ton of work. On this side of me, which I'm not going to show you, is like the workout machine and the TV and whatever. And that's going to be, we're basically turning this room into like a true office.
Right.
So I hope.
There'll be a reason to move the calendar.
I hope that the calendar will get itself back up there, even if I have to put it up every week for the podcast, because my wife might say, no, it doesn't work there. I might just have to tape it up for the weekend and then take it down. Like my gear, all this gear here, as soon as the podcast ends, I unplug everything. I remove this arm off the table and I just dump it in a corner because it's very intrusive. So like if my wife wants to use the computer, even if it's like I can turn this so that it's out of the way, like mm-hmm. you just sit here and type, she doesn't like it. So
elbow space.
I just like unplug, toss everything over. And then if I'm good Friday nights, I set it back up. If I'm not good, I do it Saturday morning while I'm madly trying to get you the link.
You know what? Podcast. It's funny. We don't have, there's a desktop computer. I have, I re-imaged an old Dell. So it's running a Linux system, and it has a wireless card in it. So it's upstairs. We have kind of near the kitchen, just off to the side, there's sort of like the kids' homework table, I guess. So that desktop is there. And that's about the closest thing, I guess, we have to a family computer. My kids don't have computers of their own. There's just that one desktop. And my spouse and I each work off laptops. So we don't have, like, are you working off, is it actually a desktop you're at right now?
It's a desktop. And yeah. It's a beast. Like we got it built the way it is on purpose to handle. It's got lots of memory for photos and videos, but it's like it's got some power in case I want to do like video stuff or whatever.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, we haven't gone there. So, but where I'm going back to is you taking down your kit and setting up your kit and that whole, mine is actually quite dressed down. Like I don't have, I mean, you've always seen a bit of the guts of my basement here. You know, I've sometimes managed to just position the camera just right so I can put my head in front of the fuse box there. And you can see the window up in the top there. It's always hard to do the thing. So that's sort of the side of my house up to outside.
My dream is one day to see somebody like look in the window.
They would have to be like on their hands and knees. They'd have to be on their hands and knees to sort of peek in that window. But yeah, you tell me over the shoulder. That'd be good found footage.
Hey, right? Clough, there's some dude behind you.
You know what it probably is? It'll be like a raccoon or something. We got some pretty big ones in the neighborhood. And they will do that. There was one. So the one that you see here, there's another one. So the room that I'm in here right now is kind of like, this is the short end. There's the wall there. You can see the wall behind me, but it's a rectangle and goes this way. Mm-hmm. At the far corner there, there's another window. And for, God, like 4 or 5 years now, I haven't figured out. I had it covered now, you know, like one of those well covers. For the longest time, there was something using it as its personal toilet. And I actually had a camera 1 year. I never got a picture of it, but there was something just defecating in that thing all the time. It was disgusting, absolutely disgusting. So I got to figure out a new plan. I guess I could call in like animal services to try and capture it. I don't know.
You could. It's all about your perspective.
Can I flip this to school chat?
Go nuts, man. Okay. Flip.
I love that whole idea. So the whole talk of taking down the system and pulling the stuff apart, like my basement is just a mess of wires. I know in the summertime, I'm actually going to try and streamline everything. It's a funny thing I've been doing with a lot of my tech. How do I get it down? I was thinking yesterday about how happy I was when I picked up my backpack and the only thing in my backpack was my laptop and my power cord. That was it. And I got my job done. I got everything that I needed to do. I did it. And then when I closed my laptop at the end of the day, I had a sense of that's all I need to take home. I don't have to take home any paper. I don't have to take home another binder. And I'm trying to go, you know, using the whole inbox zero mentality to streamline stuff. And that includes throwing out cables, like not keep, you know, recycling stuff, like not keeping the extra pieces around that I keep just because. So I know that at the end of the school year, I'm going to be able to take a couple of days and just kind of clean up this basement space. And not like you, I'm not putting in renos. I mean, it's not going to look any prettier when we go to like season two, but you know, there may be a few, cause some of these things actually are like, for me, like I'm kind of surrounded by my kids' art, like their creativity down here. I'm definitely not the type, and I got some Star Wars and some Lego stuff all up here behind it and some Marvel comic stuff. It's kind of like, you know, I don't have my workspace in the garage set up, but the basement is where I have all this memorabilia, I guess. But you make me think about, like, do you have to pack up everything in your classroom? Like at the end of the school year, do you have to pack everything up and put it away in some fashion? Or can you, as long as it's tidy and stuff is kind of back on the shelves, like what's your re-inventory kind of process at the end of the year?
Well, at this school, they want me to make sure I have nothing on the shelf tops, which are covered with books. So I have to take those and I'm lucky I have a back room with extra shelving. We call it the patio because there used to be patio doors on it, but they took that down because it was a safety issue. I remove everything off the tops of shelves. I put them in the patio. I take stuff off my main whiteboards so that they can be washed down. The computer, my desk with the computer and stuff, I clear the desk off, but I don't touch the computer. That's IT does that. And then I clear off the top of my desk. So basically, like, that's it. Oh, and I've got these black plastic bookshelves where I have duotangs and stuff. I take that apart. So, I mean, it's not extensive, but it's still a pain in the you-know-what. Because when you walk in, it adds to the it's probably the easiest part of setting up my room because it's automatic. But it's still annoying because it's there. And I have to say, as I get older, I'm getting more tired. I don't like the start of the school year. Let's put that out there right now. I think I've talked about this before. I do not like the starts of new school years. I do not like the month of September in setting up rules and routines because it's a lot of work and it's stressful and it causes me anxiety. So let's not mess around. Like, let's not just be like, oh, roll in, dislike September. No, it comes with the mental baggage that you have to deal with on top of starting new routines and all that stuff that comes with the start of a new school year. I don't like it. I know lots of people feel really excited about it. So that's how it plays out at this school. Now we're having major construction outside of the classrooms this year. We're getting stuff removed. We're getting new tile floors in the hall, things like that. So I'm going to have a heart to heart with my custodian. That's going to involve a Tim Hortons coffee and a donut. and basically say, like, can you tell me what the bare minimum is that I need to do in my room? Because I'm not feeling it right now. So tell me what I need to do and I'll do it. But don't, I'm not interested in all the extras. I'm just not. So without ruining a relationship, I'm going to try to figure out how to make it work. So sorry for the long answer, but I felt like there's context around that. Like there's stuff going on there. This school's pretty good that way. The custodian says, well, the former custodian, we have a new one now, but he just say, make clear that off, clear this off, and I'll take care of the rest. Like I can work around whatever.
This year, no, I'm a similar space. I've always been quick to check in with caretaking staff to try and understand, okay, are you folks coming into, is this a general dusting summer? Or are you coming in and refinishing the floors? Like what's the level? Often I've been told, you know, don't change any, like you do your intensive cleanup. The less that's in, the less that's needs to be moved, the better. So for the last, I'd say, geez, for the last 8 years, that's pretty much involved me packing up every computer, rewrapping every cable, finding a way to stack up every monitor and putting them on some sort of a rolly cart. And, you know, having my white or silver Sharpie to identify, writing it in an inconspicuous spot, sort of, you know, under the chest, somewhere around it that I can kind of, you know, write the program on it, hoping that all that tech comes back. This year is a little bit different. We are, at some point, we're going to be getting 13 Chromebooks. So they have already delivered the cart. So I know I have a lockup space. I'm hoping that they arrive in time that I can walk my colleague through, you know, how to charge them, how to lock them up, like how to sort of manage it. She's moved deep into her techiness, but there's a truth in this that they may arrive over the summer and the new instructor coming in is going to have to figure that out. I mean, I'm out there, they can reach out to me, but I won't be able to help them out at all with the deployment. And I know there's local IT people that will come in and help. But this year, what's different is that I'm going to be making how-to videos for my colleague. So as I disassemble a computer, I almost feel like I want to have a GoPro or something, but I'm going to be filming where each cable goes into the back of the computer and why I kind of wrap it the way that I do and why I've kind of set up the class the way it is. And we have a couple, not router boxes, but like switch boxes in the room that kind of extend the Wi-Fi around, show why I've configured it the way that I have. So there's going to be a couple hours of how-to videos I'm going to have to put together so that if they're not in a position to use the Chromebooks, which are basically open up and log in, right? Like it's that straightforward. If for whatever reason, they're students that would be better on a desktop as opposed to having just their portable device in the room, they'll be able to set it up. So that'll be a little bit different. But have you started to take anything home yet?
No.
So any of your gear that you have in the class that's yours,
that'll happen like later in June.
I started May. I start taking home the little things that are just, you know, the little tchotchke things around the room, or I have some of my own children's drawing. Like if my daughter or my son do it, like I have a spot on a cork board, I've taken some of that stuff down.
A lot of it I can say lives at school. The technology I'll bring home.
Yeah.
Like there's tech that's there that's mine. That's not staying because you never know what's going to happen. And I have in the past locked up not every teacher has a filing cabinet that locks. So I'm fortunate. I have one that locks and I have the key for it. So in past years at schools where I've had that, I've dumped everything in the drawer and just locked it. And then I have to make myself a map. Like, I don't know if you've ever had to do that. I have to make myself a map and I have to write down how to start the school year off and where things go so that if I'm not feeling creative or if I'm not in the mood to change something, I know I have a plan. because what happens to me is I get bogged down. With the like the planning aspects of preparing for the new school year. So, okay, like what kind of activity do I want to kick things off with? What happens if that doesn't work? What's going to be my backup? Because I don't know these kids for the most part. I don't know these kids. So when you go in and you go in cold, you don't have as much room to dance. You don't have as much room to deviate because you don't know the kids. So you overplan. And you overplan. I try to overplan like high level type stuff because I want the first thing we do, like I want it to be a big thing so I can use that as a lesson for mindset and not giving up and looking at the process and then looking at the product and being proud of going through a process to get to a product. Like this is kind of cool that I get to talk about this because I guess most people think Chidiac just walks in and does whatever and then goes home at the end of the day. There's a little bit more to it than that. I do put a lot of thinking behind my preparation. I don't walk around talking about it. So it's kind of neat that here, as we're talking about taking rooms down and setting rooms up, that's like the majority, the mental space is my cognitive processes are running this thought stuff about like putting things together for kids and having something ready for them to do or for them to think about and then be able to create or deal with. So the last thing I need is to be thinking about how to set up my room, but that's where my mind goes because it's easy to procrastinate there. It's so easy to procrastinate. If you're not in somebody else's room chatting them up, you're in your room trying to figure out how do I want my desks to look this year, which is all BS. Like so I make a map of where things are on the boards that like my non-negotiables, like my cue chart and other like things that are I put up for the use of students, word wall, things like that. And then my head goes into planning. Every year I think that I'll do this stuff in June, July, but I don't. It happens the last couple of weeks of August because what's happened is July, I tend to focus on long range plans and on IEPs. Cause that's how I start to get to know my new students who have IEPs is to read their stuff and then to start thinking about like what curriculum is going to be covered around when it might be covered and how that fits in with this student's learning. So I have to give myself a pat on the back for that one. That's a big one. I don't like to wait until October for that. I like to do that in July. But at one school I worked at, this was the best. One school I worked at, I was there for 4 years. After the second year, it was June, I was starting to get antsy. So I had this big closet, like it was huge, and it had this big door on it. And I'd open the door, and what I did was, for the month of June, I had sticky notes right on the inside of that door. So when I would open the door, the first one said September startup, and then there was the list of all the stuff that I needed for September startup. And then it said desk arrangement. And then I had like 3 or 4 point notes on desk arrangement so that when I would come back in the room and I'd look at the room and I'd be like, oh God, what am I going to do? As soon as I'd open the closet door, those stickies would be there. And it would be like, okay, I need this many duotangs, right? I need pencils, pencil crayons, crayons. Like it was all there so that I didn't have to think about it. I just followed the list. I've not done that here at this school. I might, if there aren't any big changes for next year, then maybe in June I'll start the sticky note thing so that when I open that drawer to pull the tech out and the tchotchkes out, it'll be, okay, I need this many duotangs in this many spaces. I need this, this, and this. Mind you, I will have some of the students I have this year, I will have in my class next year. So that will alleviate some of the stress of I don't know the kids. And that happened actually this year and last year. I had kids that were still in the room that stayed with me. And it was good because I explained something and I say, if you need assistance with any of what I just said, you can see me or you can see those four because they know it. And they're all nodding like, and I'll say to them, am I serious about this point? And they're like, he's serious about this point. Like it was a bit of a comedy act, but it reduced the anxiety level for them, for me. Hopefully the joking reduced the anxiety for the new kids. I hope that's part of the humor is to get them just to chill. Because in an elementary school, I can appear to be intimidating if you don't know me, right? And depending on who you talk to, they may still say I'm intimidating. Other kids might say he's not intimidating at all. Just, you got to work with him. He's going to work with you and it's going to be great. There's so many layers. I'm glad we're talking about this, because this isn't where I wanted to go. This is hard work for me, and I didn't want to put in the hard work this morning. But you're forcing me to grind it out.
It's end of school years. There's a whole lot of feels that come up in it. There's a whole lot of feels. And it doesn't change the technical aspect of closing the semester. And that means something different, I think, for every educator. Every educator has a different space, a different sort of set of achievables or whatever their learning goals are that work for their context. In my particular case, part of the closing up the semester with the students and successful, I don't know if it's fortunate or unfortunate, I've also bound my transition out of the classroom into that exact same pile. And in the on-ramp, you know, I kind of went on and on about how I've kind of benched that a little bit. I've had to push it out of my mind. Like, I really haven't given, after recognizing that I wanted some change, and that when that thought occurs, you know, surveying what's there, what have I built that could be an option for change, and then making the change, it's then kind of lock it up and get back to the job of closing, so that there's no misconception, like somehow I'm already there and I've left the building, right? I'm back in the game with 1 month to go, month and change to go. And so I've started to kind of scrutinize, and it tends to be away from the classroom. How is it? What are the other pieces besides the credit acquisition and staying connected with the families and everything else that's sort of a part of the normal classroom routines? I'm slightly heightened now and probably going to have to make some videos and some checklists that you're talking about, but it's for a colleague that I might never meet. Like, I might never actually meet the individual that's coming in to replace me. This past week, the posting closed. It was open from May 9th to May 16th. So wait, it's only May 12th. Sorry.
You still have a couple of days.
Dude, I'm thinking of a different position. Mine was open. Mine, it closed on the 9th. There's another in the portable where I work. There's another position in a different program that closes on the 16th. I apologize for that. Mine closed on the 9th. So that was Wednesday? I think that was Wednesday. Yeah. So who knows? The candidates that they end up interviewing, I may get a chance to meet them. But just like me meeting my new staff and community, I'm probably only going to meet them on our last PD day, which is in the last couple of days of June. Like, traditionally, if you're joining a new staff, it's at that final staff meeting that you go and you sort of check and say, hey, and then you kind of move on from there. I'm hoping that during our exam period, I'll be able to go visit, that my principal will say, okay, you can go check it out. But we'll see. That's something that would have to be negotiated, because technically I'm not, it's that weird thing. Like, I am not my next job until September. So making the videos, and when I mentioned making the videos, it's more just for putting all the tech away so that my colleague can put things back together confidently in a way that she's grown to appreciate this year. So a lot of the changes, the structural changes and the program delivery that she's observed this year, we've had a lot of conversations about how her growth and enjoying seeing. So my colleague, a CYW, so her and I, both the educators in the room, her growth has been exponential as far as seeing what, because I brought external styles into this kind of a siloed program. There hadn't been, I would say, when I walked in, despite the fact it was a brand new space, I was looking at a classroom design that looked like 1985. I mean, it was row on row thinking. There were study carrels in the room, which I get can be useful, but there was a lot of study carrels in the room. There was just everything about the room said, you can only sit here and learn in this one little spot. Don't bother looking at the walls. Don't bother looking at the window. You know what I mean? So I made some changes to sort of make the learning a little bit more portable. I think I've shared some pictures with you. I mean, it varies. It's a sort of multimodal room because I could be teaching math at the same time that I'm teaching English, at the same time that a kid is doing a learning strategies course. So I have to have spaces in the room where I can just say, okay, when you're thinking about self-regulation, check out that poster that I have over there. And then my English student, okay, you're reading Hamlet. You know what? Maybe you can have a look at that same self-regulation. So me mapping out next year and where everything goes back, it's fascinating because I'm having to take into account, will my colleague who's currently there be able to make the suggestions for the rebuild? Which I don't know when you're planning to leave or you're planning to close, if you have a dedicated classroom, or if you do teach solo, you never really have the opportunity to think about, well, is my colleague going to be okay with building it themselves? You know, I mentioned to you the last 8 years, I've had to come back in and put my own computers back together just because they all get packed up at the end of the school year. Well, that now is going to fall to them. And I'll have to set in motion some sort of a reasonable plan so that they can at least try to do it that way. I mean, there's lots of forums out there. You can figure out how to plug in an Ethernet cable and like you can figure that stuff out. But that's the extra little layer that I won't say I'm wrestling with it, but I recognize it's not the usual thing to be thinking about, as in how do you leave your classroom and all your inventory in such a state? You know what it's like? It's like I'm building for a sick day. I feel like I'm leaving behind the plans for a sick day, right? Except I'm going to be sick forever. Like I'm gone, but I'm trying to set it up as if they can look at the paperwork and go, okay, what is it that we have to do here to set up? And I guess in theory, it is possible that they could have students on the first day. What that would mean is that some student in the last week of school gets expelled, and then that expulsion carries over to September. So beyond the setting up the room, where the pens and pencils, where's the computer? Oh my gosh. The new instructor coming in may have to start teaching on that first day. So it'll be, I don't know what that support system looks like for the person coming in. I'm hoping that they'll get a chance to, you know, kind of come in and talk with me. And definitely if we get a student, I'm going to contact the teacher and say, hey, by the way, you got a kid coming in and you're going to have to prep over the summer. There's resources here, but you're going to need grade 9 math, the courses I can speak to. It's fascinating. Like I don't think I've ever had, this is, I think, the first time I've ever had a conversation about the complexity of closing the semester.
See, this is the stuff I love about this podcast, because these conversations don't happen. They just don't happen. No. Like, you're right. It's so cool to hear about, you know, you're leaving. Right? Like it's happening. So it's more than just closing down the year and starting up in the new year, because you're actually physically moving. You're taking whatever belongs to you in that room and it's gone. It's not coming back. You're not going back to that room. I remember I do this weird thing when I leave a school. After my room is all emptied out and it's the last day, I turn around, I take a photo of the room. I don't know why. It's like that was my home for how many years and now it's not my home. Like there is a little bit of sadness, like, because that was my turf. That was my classroom. That's where like a certain number of kids came in, lived their lives for 10 months and then moved on with their lives. There's something about it. There's something about it that's very like gratifying, but there's also something about it that's very sad. So I don't know if you'll miss your space, like if you'll turn around and take a shot of it before you leave so that one day you can look back on it. I don't know. You know, as time goes on, like when I was talking to my students this year about taking three-dimensional photos, I was going through my 3D photos that are on the internet. And I stumbled across one at my last school. And I was at my last school, I was there for 2 years. And in the first year, I set up the room and I took a 3D photo. And the kids were like, what is that? And I said, oh, that's my last classroom that I had.
Like, 3D or 360?
360. Sorry, 360.
No, you had me fast. I was like, cool, a 3D?
No. Sorry. Thank you for correcting me there.
Because I totally wanted to take a 3D photo this year. I'm like, I get the 360. Because you have that, is it Google Sphere?
Yeah.
And you can just kind of sit and it shows you the panels where you have to take. Yeah. And it's maybe exactly. I'll take one of those. I'll take one of those before I leave. Keep on going though, man.
So for the one or two listeners that hear this in like a year from now, I didn't mean 3D. I meant 360, right? Because nobody else is listening except us, Clough. You know that, right?
That's okay.
I know. I'm good with it too. It's just, I feel like that injecting that humor of, oh, in 3 years from now, one person will hear this. They'll be like, what's Roland talking about?
He's so edgy. 3 years ago, he was taking 3D photos.
So the kids are like, show us. So I showed them. And it was so cool because as I'm showing them, they're looking around our space. Like, why does our space look so different? I'm like, well, there's a lot of reasons, the way that the room is built, mm-hmm. right? The storage space within the room. This other room had a wall of windows. Like, literally, the whole wall was just one big window. At my new school, where I am right now, the window is tiny. Like, I wouldn't even be able to escape out the window. I would die trying to leave. It's one of those schools where they, I guess when they built it, they were more fascinated with, let's keep the cool air and the warm air in here, so let's not put in a lot of windows. Whereas my last school, there was no such thing. It was like whatever the weather was outside, that's what it was going to be inside your room because it was a wall of windows. There's a lot that goes with closing out a year and opening a new year, especially if you move. Because think of the culture of the building you're in. Like, okay, so I'm going to make some assumptions here about your job right now.
Okay.
You work with a CYCW.
Yes.
A handful of kids. And are you out in a portable or something?
We are.
Okay, so you're pretty isolated. Like,
yes. We're in a portable, so we're on the property.
Of a high school.
Of one of the high schools that we actually service.
Okay.
Which makes it interesting. So we service six high schools, one of them of which we're actually on the property of. So it's a big, what do they call it? A port-a-pack? It's kind of like a big,
mm-hmm.
I think we have six classroom spaces out there.
Okay. So in your port-a-pack, what's happening? You're the teacher for access. Who are the other people in that port-a-pack?
There's Alt Ed.
Okay.
And there's a Section 23 classroom that's connected with KINARC.
Okay. So do you talk to these colleagues?
Yep. I connect with them every once in a while.
Is there a staff area in your port-a-pack where you guys sit and chill? No.
No.
So are you allowed in the building to go sit in staff room?
Yes.
Do you have a mailbox in the building?
I do.
But your principal's not in that building?
Correct.
So you don't report to anybody in that building?
No, I do not. Well, apart from, let's say, facility issues, and I mean the principal, the administration there, I guess, does have jurisdiction to a degree because
it's on the property.
It's on the property, but I don't. Yeah, everything, every question, every structural, procedural, administrative, pedagogical question that we have, it's sending an email, it's phoning, or sometimes texting our boss.
That's major, man. That's big time. That's totally different than anything I've ever, well, that's not true. I did have kind of an experience like that, but that's huge. Like, you're so isolated in a way,
mm-hmm.
you know, like you're so isolated. But I guess you do well with that. You're okay with that. See, I don't know if I could do that.
It's funny, eh? Cause I don't, it's difficult to say whether I'm okay with it because I've gotten used to it. I've gotten used to that type of autonomy. I mean, in my last portfolio, when I was in pure alternative education, I was brought in as the department head when the program came to the school. So there was a lot of here, you know, go ahead, figure it out. And I had some great mentorship, but I would say I had a lot of mentorship, but not a lot of leadership. And that was inside the school. And I'm saying it more leadership from the point of view of, let's say, telling me what to do with the program. The mentors that I had, some of them were the administrators, but they kind of said, like they had experience in Alt Ed, and they shared their experience, and then they said, Clough, you're gonna have to choose. You're gonna have to sort of make these decisions. And there wasn't a lot of, you really should be doing this with the program. So I had autonomy when I was within the school. So then moving outside of, let's say, a main school setting or a regular school setting, I was already used to the, I guess you could put the burden, not, is it the burden? The burden of having to sort of like make decisions and be in the trenches at the same time. And it's funny, I've spoken about this, I think at least once with you before, back in my previous, when I was a chef, I've been a part of a lot of startups when I think back, like even the restaurant that ultimately I ended up, you know, where I would say I was the executive chef, I was a part of that being opened. And then as I sort of worked through the ranks and took over the kitchen, I then had to write the recipe books. I had to write the staff procedural things. Like I was a part of these, the designs that were the nuts and bolts. So I've somehow found myself, maybe it's the opportunity you're building before change happens. So I always found myself kind of in the trenches building these little pieces and then said, okay, go for it. Let's see how it turns out. And that's very much what this access program is like. There's a lot of structural things that it's good that they were in place before I got there, but we've really been able to, my colleague and I, create according to what we see in front of us. So the next person coming in may enjoy that. They may flourish in that space. But it is true. I think that can be something that can unhinge you a little bit, because you're in a space where a decision does have to be made. It really does have to be made. And you might not be able to get in contact with your admin team for the thumbs up. I'll give one example that is, it's kind of a glaring example, and probably any teacher listening to this will be able to connect with. A month or so ago, I got a call from the kid's school that my son was barfing at school. Now that's a pretty, you know, in your mind as a parent, like it's clear as a parent and it's clear as a teacher what the next step is. It is. It's quite clear. A parent, you're just like, you're already in your car, potentially on your way mentally, whatever it might be, to take care of your kid. You want to help out in some way. But then you have to go through the sort of stepping stones of setting things up, right? You have to make sure, because you're not about to abandon the classroom. That's a bad thing. It's an illegal thing. We know this thing. So, but the procedure inside a bigger school would be get in touch with maybe the secretary, whoever kind of deals with staffing, probably getting in touch with your admin. And ultimately, within a reasonably short amount of time, someone would be at the door of your classroom saying, okay, what do I got to do? Where's the paperwork? That's not the case. There is no systematic backup like that, because I'm not actually on staff I'm not actually a part of the staff stable of the high school that I'm on that property. So me getting coverage is, or a teacher within our program is getting coverage for these emergency instances, is a little bit more complex than that. And it took quite a bit of time for me to be able to get that settled, to get somebody in to cover, to sort of, and to get in contact with my administrator, because they were in meetings, they were somewhere in the board, right? Because their portfolio is more than just us. So it was a lot of broken telephone. So from the point, I would say from the point that of contact where I knew that I started to kind of put together the paperwork, because this kid's working on math and this kid's working on something. So getting all those plans in motion, it was about 2 hours. And within a school, that just wouldn't be. And I recognize that, right? But this is the other side to that autonomy. And, you know, one of the things I've said a couple of times to my colleague and to my colleague that I work with, but also the other teachers, I said, these are the type of protocols that they really want to tighten up a bit. Like they want to try and get it as in step with what regular school does as best as possible, and have something that could sort of be, you know, like what's their quick response. Now, my son wasn't in peril, But when you're told he's barfing, you have to take him home. Like, you don't get to just say, yeah, let's let him just keep barfing in the whatever the care room that you have. You got to take your kid home. So that's the interesting thing. And I think for some people that could be a bit of a, you know, when they think about the challenges of moving into this type of a program, that could be something that they're going to maybe be a little bit stressed about. They could be thinking like, okay, like how is, if they consider it, it might not even be a consideration for them. But for me, for you, fathers, teachers, family, we've talked about this before. It's something that I appreciate that in this career we have the supports. In my particular context, it's not as clear as to how that is how that requirement is satisfied, but you got to dance with it. That's just ultimately you got to dance with it,
I guess. So what else are you gonna do, right?
Well, that's exactly it, because you're suddenly confronted with the reality of, well, I don't walk out the room. Now we can talk to our colleagues down the hall, but they have classes to watch too. I guess our admin could contact the other admin at the big school and say, can you send someone down to watch it? But again, it comes down to just getting these things firmed. All I can do is reach out to my admin and say, I need to leave here within 15 minutes because my son is filling a garbage can with vomit. I have to go take him home. And I can only imagine, because we don't have these protocols in place. We have some soft ones that when they work awesome, but it's not formalized. So I can only imagine on their end, or they're probably considering, well, I guess I have to cancel this meeting. I have to go down to the one site and sit in the classroom, which can happen in a main school too. When I was back at my last high school, I think I've told you I was branch president for our union. So I was like the local guy. I was constantly being called into meetings. And these would be on the fly. Could be a lot of different stuff. It could be something to do with staff. It could be something to do with system. It could be staffing, like lots of little conversations. Countless times an administrator would just show up at my door and say, okay, remember, I'm the one that's going to cover your class today. You can go and sit. So a vice principal would sit in the class and just cover. But again, we don't have that. It's not a part of, that isn't formalized with my program. Sorry, with the program that will soon be somebody else's program.
I want to, if it's okay with you, I want to just do a quick shift and then say our goodbyes. Are you good with that? I have two Colombian students coming to my classroom next week for 3 weeks.
That's kind of cool.
It is kind of cool. It's also it's also frightening, yeah, in a way. But we have, I guess, international students come to our area. Yeah. And then our school board sends them to schools in the system for them to experience what it's like to be here, I guess.
We have the same thing. We have something similar.
And so I got the tap on the shoulder that there are 6 students coming to our school, and 2 of them will be in my classroom community. So I wanted to know, has this ever happened to you in, yep, like your high school teaching setting?
Yep. We also have, so that, yes, that can happen where students, it's almost like they're on an educational tour. So they kind of just land for a little while in the classroom. I've also had students where they, and I forget the name of it, but it's like an exchange program. I don't know if it's the same thing at elementary, but we have that where the students go somewhere for part of a semester, and we've had students come here on exchange as well. It's funny because I've always, at secondary level, what I'm fascinated by in those instances is watching. Like, in some ways, despite that, like I did high school like that. I mean, I did a lot of French exchanges in high school. I would say that's where I really developed my love of languages and my love of travel and my sort of capacity to remain open in the face of new cultures, like just to kind of soak it up, right? Even if I didn't understand what I was soaking up, I just kind of take it in. And I was always fascinated. It always struck me that everything was really figured out well about this, like the amount of time you would go there, the kids supporting their travel. There's the families always seem really kind. But it struck me like there was this imbalance in the understanding of what the challenges of the school system that a student is coming from and then landing in. I never was really at the table where they said, we're looking at this purely as an experience. There always seemed to be something about it, like there had to be academic success, which I'm not saying is a bad thing, but I would say it's not the only thing. And a student arriving in a brand new learning community, a brand new school, I get they may have just come out of a former school and been in this new school, but I don't know if that's the right focus. I almost, and I understand that these programs are designed to be an extension of school, but I was never at the table of the conversation that really said, how do we build an educational experience that isn't bound to academic success? So the kids can come and enjoy, they can observe, they're supported in their kind of just being in the classroom without being too weighed down by the fact that, oh, they just did a writing task, I'm going to have to do that writing task now. I don't know how to talk about this without almost making me seem like, why can't the kids just have fun when they come here? I get it. This is sort of the vehicle, the pipeline is school. But for me, it was one of those glaring spaces where do all learning spaces have to be about school? Does it have to be about school specifically, our understanding of school, for it to be a great experience that the kid could have? So I look forward to hearing some of your reflections on that, because it is exciting. I imagine it's slightly frightening. The logistics of it are kind of bewildering. And I would say that's probably all going to be mirrored in the two children that are going to arrive in your classroom too, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I'm hoping that it starts off nice and smooth, right? Like they come in, we welcome them, we give them a place to call home within the room for the time that they're going to be with us. And we just try our best to support them and incorporate them in all the in our community.
Yeah, there's I think it was before we hit record, I have gotten used to last minute switch ups. Every time I sort of start to look at change for myself, the universe says, okay, here's one more thing, though, we'd like you to pay attention to. So I would say for me, you're in good stead. If this is the last minute switch up in the school year for you, you're in good stead, because I'm already in this mindset. Like, you know, I go back into work on Monday and anything could happen. I could have another six students suddenly suspended. My cap is 16. I, in theory, could get right up to my cap in 1 week. We could have no students show up for a week because of life things. Like there's so many things that just the last minute switch ups I've come to accept as reality. The second part to that, which I mentioned, is that whenever I've been in transition in any of my career so far, those last moments going through there, there's always been new things that I've never experienced before. There's never been that transition that's just like this nice and smooth. I've never had that. And the funny thing is, I wonder, what would that even look like? I think I would almost feel like, I think it would in a lot of ways, it would reinforce the fact like, yeah, you really should leave. Like if this is all the job has to offer. I love that as I'm transitioning, my jobs are saying, remember this, keep your eye on this. Like it's still teaching me. My career is still teaching me, even as I shift out of a portfolio that I think to myself, I'm ready to leave. And that's, maybe that's what's happening to you here. It's a little bit of a reminder, like, aha, one more thing. Here's another thing. Are you excited? I hope you're excited. I get everything else, but I hope there's some sort of excitement about this that, in the least, it could be a small refresher, maybe.
Oh, For sure. It is exciting that way, that it'll be neat, like, to learn about these people, where they come from, what they're about. Like, it's two more stories, right, to get rolled into this school year. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. You know, if you put aside my anxiety about, like, do I need to report what these kids have done? What does that look like? How much do I expect them to do?
Like what I was saying about that conversation between experience and academic success. Like, let's talk about this.
Not only that, what are the expectations?
Yes.
Is somebody going to talk to me?
Yeah.
Because I've been told someone's going to connect with me. So I guess if it doesn't happen midweek, then I will initiate that process and see what comes of it. But like, I generally don't do well with that. When you just give me something and you don't give me any expectations. If you give me something and you expect me to be creative and to run with it and try to innovate, that's good. But if you give me something, I don't want to get caught in the middle of June writing 8,000 report cards that are already going to be difficult enough, and then be told, oh, by the way, don't forget to report on the two students that visited your class, and here's the template. But I don't have the information that they're seeking because I was not made aware of what that was. I would rather not be in that position. So now that I've said all that to you, until I hear from somebody, I'm just going to go with the flow and make sure that their experience is a positive one, that they are good with where they are, that they enjoy themselves, that they learn something from the time that they're with us.
I get it. And one of the places that I've been in there that it tends to be a little bit of a tripwire for me is where the best response I get is use your professional judgment and be flexible. I find that's a bit of it's a trope in education sometimes. I will always do that. And I know my head is just shaking no, I think, but I will always do that. I will always use my best possible professional judgment, and I will always be flexible. I benefit from that as well. But I'm also a tactician and a strategist, and I like to see where the fence lines are, and I like to know who the person I can ask for direction when my professional judgment can't be informed by my own experience. I need something that just a little bit more. So that's where in those spaces, I feel like, and I go back to, I haven't sat at that table. I hope it's out there, but I haven't sat at that table that clearly lays out to me, if the student arrives in your class at X amount of time left in the semester, do we declare and say, this is going to be an experience? Allow them to just have some freedom to explore your classroom. You are not on the hook for reporting in the traditional manner. You'll do this type of report instead. And it's all good. It's like, cool. I can keep doing exactly what I'm doing, supporting the kids or kid in the way that works best, according to professional judgment and classroom norms. I can do this, right? I commend you for grabbing your, it's a buzzer beater. You're bringing in another challenge. You're going for another challenge at the tail end. It'll learn you something.
Well, it's also two ELL students, right? Like, it's not just they walked in off the street, down the street. So I'm going to be using that knowledge and understanding that I have built into me as well on what that looks like and how to accommodate with respect to language. So I'm hoping that my class and my students learn a lot about who they are based, like, from the lens of their cultural perspective. Like, I want to hear their language. I want to know what it's like to live in their country. So I want some stuff out of this too. It's not just that they're coming to visit and we're gonna pour knowledge into them or whatever, a cultural experience into them. I'd like some of that back.
Yeah. No, I agree. And part of that still comes back to, though, it comes back to the fact that some direction, who's my go-to going to be? Who else has gone through this before? What's our school sort of philosophy on it? I appreciate that I have a great landing spot for a kid to come here. Do I have access to a consultant that can speak, where you say, from Colombia? So
yeah.
So is Spanish they would be speaking? I'm maybe. So who could be the language support for this? Like, there's some really cool potentials. Hopefully there's a mold If not, there's the supports to build the mold so that going through this can, this experience can benefit not only the family, the children that are coming, the school community, and you. I mean, I think that's a reasonable expectation because, you know, the magic doesn't just happen. It happens because of the appropriate resources at the appropriate time. Mm-hmm. With professional judgment and flexibility. Hey, like it can be done when it's done outside of any sort of framework. How can you replicate it? You know, how can you ever do it again? How was that? Well, it was magical. It was magical. So,
Chris, do you have any homework this week?
So here's the thing. I think in the spirit of, because our on-ramp was complete, our on-ramp was awesome. Here's what I'm thinking about coming out of that. But we didn't speak to the on-ramp, I think, directly. We kind of glanced off it a few ways. Here's the thing that I'm looking at moving forward, because even in the wrap-up, trying to escape the escape velocity, so getting out of the gravity of my position, I'm thinking about where I need to kind of stretch. So where is it I still need to kind of build some skill sets? For me, dude, I'm actually looking at my math skills. I'm coming out of this whole experience right now. Like I need to not only build in my, change my mindset about math, but I'm actually starting to enjoy math, which all of a sudden makes me think, okay, I got a whole lot of learning to do. Like I need to start building my capacity to deliver mathematical thinking across all grades in high school. And I was also thinking about leaping. So I kind of put it into three levels. So the whole stretching, snapping, and leaping. So snapping, what is just like I'm done. I'm done with that. I'm done with thinking that. I'm done with using that. I'm done with sort of looking at the tenuousness of that and just waiting for it to snap. I'm just going to prune it and move on. And then the leap. So what is it that I really don't have necessarily any right or obligation, or my ego says I deserve it, but I'm going to kind of jump at it and sort of moving that into fam. No, what is it? The 2-4 weekend next weekend, May 2-4.
I forgot about that. I keep forgetting about that. How could I forget about that?
Long week and short week. So, and then we've wrapped May.
May's a wrap.
So that's it, dude. I'm happy Hangouts hunt. Like, this is cool. Thank you, Hangouts. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Google, for letting us do this week.
Thank you. So, yeah, good seeing you, man.
Same here. I'm glad we could work things out.
For sure.
Looking forward to getting that audio from you when you can on.
It's shared in your Gmail.
Okay. Okay. Now I just have to figure out what to do with it.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's put together. I hang it. You know what? Hang it. It's funny. I listened to it this morning and it basically starts with me laughing. Like it cues in with me laughing. And you saying, well, I'm glad someone's laughing. And we go for this. I think that's a solid start. That's as solid a start for any podcast as any.
So you're telling me all I need to do is grab it.
Yeah. It's a MP3. Yeah. That's like it.
Hang it where I hang my MP3s and that's then connect it to the video. Okay.
That's it.
The video's hilarious. Hi, everyone. I literally have 2 seconds before this thing turns off again. So here's episode 32. Here's the like 30-second video. You have to listen to the audio. Thanks. And then it's like somebody just cut the cord.
Yeah.
Google's like, not today, kids.
Well, anyway. They let us back in.
Yeah, they let us back in. Okay. You enjoy the rest of your weekend. Happy Mother's Day to your partner.
I love you just said that. Imagine if I wasn't. I like you said, you know, happy Mother's Day if you're into that. I'm like, wow, imagine if I wasn't. Imagine if you could actually swing that. We're not doing Mother's Day this year. Yeah.
Okay, so can I just say something before we go?
Yeah.
Yesterday after school, I made sure all was good. My kids were gone. Jumped in my car and took off to like 3 different places to pick some stuff up for my partner. Mm-hmm. And every time I would pay for an item, the person that was working the cash was a lady, older. And, you know, she'd thank me for purchasing and then something like, have a great week. And I'm like, you too, happy Mother's Day if you're a mom. And she's like, I am a mom. And then all of a sudden you just see these people's face would glow, right? And I was like, it'd be nice if people's faces glowed much more often. I don't know. But anyway, just it was funny that at the three different places I went to, I said the same thing. Happy Mother's Day if you're a mom, if you celebrate. And they're like, yeah, we're moms. And I was like, good, good. It was just interesting.
That's cool.
Yeah,
that's cool. Know. I didn't get the chance. I didn't get the chance to say it too much. So I got to
get out today. Just grab your kids, throw them in the car. Just go from store to store, hoping that you run into a female cashier.
Mother's Day hugs.
Mother's Day. Oh, don't be hugging strangers, dude. You get yourself into trouble.
That's true.
That's true. Anyway. Okay, Chris. Hopefully we're on again next week and Google will allow us to record.
Dude, I feel reinvigorated. It's the video that does it. I think if you were to listen to the pure audio, of this week and last week, there's something. This is why Rogan does it, man. People will tolerate, if they have the access to watch the video, they'll understand why there's like no talking going on. And no talking going on sounds totally different when two people are like, it's almost like the sound of silence when someone's doing like this at the camera. Reads different than it does if it's just like, is it my turn? Oh, okay, I'll say something now, right? It's just the staccato of it. So I like being back with the video. I dig it.
Okay.
All right, man.
That's it for this week. We'll see you next week.
For sure, man. Take care.
See ya.